Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today, our guest is back. It's Peter Lowe, partner at the law firm of Brown and Isaacson. Peter, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, David. Terrific to be back.
No, we haven't had you here for, I think it was September or October last year. And, you know, I know it's been crazy busy out there. It's been a very busy year for HR, has it not?
It has. And obviously, you haven't had any cancellations recently.
No, it's true. It's true. No cancellations yet. But that's a good thing. That's a good thing.
Inside joke. Inside jokes are bad to tell, aren't they?
Well, I don't know. It's pretty much outside now.
Okay.
But anyways, the bottom line at the end of the day is it's been a very busy, changing year for HR. And, you know, one of the things that I know I get a lot of conversation about is the Maine Human Rights Commission. And they seem to be just as active as ever. And is that an accurate statement? Are they as busy as ever?
They are. Yeah. Absolutely, they are. They're very busy. There's no doubt being I was going to say a trickle effect. It's more than that from all that's going on in the world around us. So the focus on sexual harassment, a big sort of spotlight shone on issues of race and racial harassment. Those will have the effect of having more claims filed without any question. The other thing about the Maine Human Rights Commission is probably for 7-8 years, they really struggled to get any attention in Augusta. In fact, the attention they got was not what they welcomed. With the political winds in Augusta blowing in a different direction now, when they go to the legislature and they seek appropriations, they're getting more funding. And frankly, they needed it. They've always historically been short-staffed. Recently, they've been able to hire some additional people. And I think you can only see more activity. And our employer clients, unfortunately, from time to time, will find themselves there. We can talk about what that means and how to handle it. But it's a very important agency here in the state of Maine, and I think we're only going to see it get more attention.
So let's back up for a minute, if we can. Let's start with, what is the Maine Human Rights Commission? I mean, I don't doubt most people that are listening say, hey, I know what that is. But let's foundationally talk about what is it, kind of how it handles cases, what exactly is its role, why would somebody go there? Let's just talk about the basics.
Sure, yeah. So the commission is an agency of the state, so it's part of state government. And many people will have heard of the EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. That's the federal agency that is the equivalent of the Maine Human Rights Commission. So the Maine Human Rights Commission is a board that is made up of individuals who've been appointed by the governor. And they serve terms, and sometimes those terms are renewed. And in fact, there's just been, I think, one new commissioner, and I think another vacancy is coming up. And as they're appointed by the governor, again, they're not a political agency or entity, but you will see that the appointments may reflect at times more people from the business side, maybe more people from the employee side, certainly neutrals as well. But they sit, and they're a representative body of people who come from maybe HR, people who come from the business community, maybe from the labor community, people who are just members of the public, maybe, as I said, more on the neutral. And they meet. Usually it's every couple of months. They meet in the Senator Inn in Augusta. Anybody who's had a claim will know that only too well. And they sit there as a board, and they hear cases of alleged violations of the Maine Human Rights Act. And the Maine Human Rights Act, in our field, the field that you and I work in most of all, involves the rights of employees, But they also hear housing cases, so housing discrimination, and they also hear cases involving public accommodation. So if I believe I was denied entry to a restaurant because of my race, that would be a case that could appear before the Maine Human Rights Commission. The largest slice of their cases are employment discrimination cases. So if I'm an employee or former employee of a business, and I believe that I was terminated wrongfully because I'm from England, and that would be national origin, I would have to, I don't have an option, I'd have to go ahead and file a complaint with either the EEOC or the Maine Human Rights Commission. I do have a choice. The great majority of the cases here in Maine go to the Maine Human Rights Commission, and I have to file that complaint. And I cannot go to court unless I file a complaint before the Maine Human Rights Commission. And I fill out a form. They literally have a form where I check a box on the form to say I believe that I was discriminated against based upon a specific protected class. What is commonly misunderstood, and you'll have heard it from employees who are frankly, disgruntled and unhappy, let's say with a termination, that they'll say, that was blatantly unfair. You're going to hear from me. I'm going to go to the state. That employee, if they go to the state and simply say, Peter treated me unfairly and he terminated, will say, well, we're not a fair employment commission. We're a discrimination commission. So I always point this out to clients, the employee has to be able to check one of the protected class boxes. Now, that's not too hard to do because we all inhabit a protected class or two or three or four, gender being one of them, so we can all check that box. So that they are the, some would call it the filter, the initial stage for any violation of the Maine human rights or alleged violation to be presented to the commission, investigated, and if a case is allowed to run its full course, and I can comment why some of them wouldn't, ultimately you'll get a decision from the commission, those folks who've been appointed by the governor, and they'll make a decision whether or not there are reasonable grounds to believe unlawful discrimination occurred.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour. I'm David Chulo, your host, and we're talking with Peter Lowe, employment attorney and partner with the law firm Brandon Isaacson. And we're talking about the Maine Human Rights Commission, what it does right now, and then we're going to be talking about, you know, how to deal with it and or avoid it, which is really the question of the day. Peter, you know, it's interesting. Employees don't usually like being terminated and don't usually like things when they don't go well. Let's be honest. That's typically why they go there. Is there an advantage to them truly to go there? What could they gain from this?
Good question. What they gain from going to the Maine Human Rights Commission, first of all, is what us lawyers call free discovery. If you file a lawsuit, and a lawsuit is when you go to court, so you may go to state court, federal court.
Sure.
There's a phase in a lawsuit called discovery where I get to ask, let's say the company I had worked for a whole bunch of information, documents, testimony. That's a laborious and expensive exercise in litigation. If you go to the Maine Human Rights Commission, the commission does that for you in that they provide a request for information. So any of your listeners out there who've ever had a complaint with the Maine Human Rights Commission, you get this form. And it says on the form, as I said, the box is checked, and it says allegedly what you did wrong. And then the commission will send their request for information, and it can be as many as 20, 25, 30 questions. And they ask you to provide quite a lot of information. And you know how you and I, when we're in front of management, we're preaching consistency, consistency, consistency.
Absolutely, no question.
So if I've been terminated from my employer because of my absenteeism. Mm-hmm. One of the requests that will be made by the commission is provide us with a list of all other employees who've been terminated in the last 3, 4, 5 years maybe, and any of those employees who are terminated for the same reason of absenteeism. That's information that an employee by itself can't get.
Right.
If I'm terminated, I can get my personnel file. I can get the reasons for my termination if I ask for them. But I can't say to you, Dave, hey, Dave, by the way, give me a list of everybody else who's been terminated. Yeah. If you go and talk to your lawyer, the lawyer's going to say, no, don't provide that. That's confidential. There's information about others. No, don't do it. If I go to the Maine Human Rights Commission, then that's one of the requests they'll make. Because the commission are looking, let's say I believe I was terminated because of my age. I was the oldest person, and I think the absenteeism is a pretext.
Sure.
I get a list of anybody else who was terminated for absenteeism. If there's other people who are my age, my case doesn't look so good. If, in fact, the other thing that will be requested is a list of those who were not terminated who engaged in similar behavior, and that can be, you know, important evidence. So what happens is you get that request, and information is then provided. It's no work on the behalf of the employee, and the commission and the investigator who's assigned to the case will look through that information. So that's one advantage. The second advantage, I believe, is that it allows both parties, in fact, to sort of pre-screen a case. I think one of the ideas of the commission is cases should be screened. It's a probable cause finding by the commission. It's not a definitive ruling that, yes, absolutely, discrimination occurred, or no, it did not. But sound a little bit like a lawyer in this answer.
In a sense, yes.
I mean,
yes.
That's
unusual.
That second cup of coffee this morning. but what it does is it provides a screening mechanism. And I've actually, you know, a lot of people say, Maine Human Rights Commission, geez, you know, you don't want to end up there. You don't. But if someone files a complaint there, and I represent management, I often see it as an outlet for the employee or former employee to have their day in court. And I use that phrase very broadly, without going to court. So they can have their case investigated. Hopefully, if I'm doing my job well and my client has given me good evidence, they're unsuccessful. And the hope, and often it's the case, is that the matter then dies, because the relative cost of defending a case before the Maine Human Rights Commission compared to defending a case in court is remarkable. It probably is going to cost 10, 15, 20, maybe 30 in a more complex case, $1,000 in legal fees before the Maine Human Rights Commission. Once you're in federal court, 10 times that amount.
Yeah, no question.
So, there is a nobody wants a claim, obviously, but it's certainly a ground that provides the person an opportunity to be heard without it being prohibitively expensive for the employer.
Well, there's no question there's certainly reasons why employers look at it and hold their head and go, oh, here we go, right? They're nervous about it. And we're going to talk about the actual process, the actual, you know, the way this all works when we come right back. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And we'll be right back.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
It's 3 p.m., and you just ran out of ink. You have a report due end of day, which is 2 hours from now. You can't push the deadline because end of day means end of today, not end of tomorrow day. What now? Go to your local Staples store. Staples now has an even bigger selection of HP ink and toner. In store, in stock, and at low prices every day. So you can get your ink fast for less. End of story.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobsinme.com has been matching main employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on JobsinME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit JobsinME.com. That's JobsinME.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine. DaleCarnegie.com. Today, our guest is Peter Lowe, and we like to call him Maine's employment attorney, or the emperor of employment law, or the lawyer of leaders, or maybe the prince of legal proceedings. These are small terms, but he is gifted and talented in more ways than you know. Peter, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. I think we talked about saying I was the czar of employment law.
Emperor. Emperor of employment law had to be E and E. That was the key. We were matching letters there.
HRH. His Royal Highness.
Hind-. Okay, we'll just move on.
No, we've gone. How long have we gone so far on the show?
One segment.
And we still haven't talked about weed.
No, we haven't talked about it, but that's our usual topic of conversation.
Okay, I'll weave that in somehow.
Because you are the marijuana king.
Let's make clear, the legal king.
Okay, the legal king, yes. Sultan of Smoke, right? We're having way too much fun with this today. Dear. It's all good. But we're really talking about the Maine Human Rights Commission. And we're talking about, you know, really understanding, first of all, kind of we talked about what it did and why it's there. Now, employers, as we all know, are nervous when they get the letter, the notification that they have a claim. So let's start right with that. Let's start right at that point. They receive the letter. What should they do at that point, right away?
Call a lawyer.
Well, first of all, can they go to the Maine Human Rights Commission themselves?
Yeah, absolutely they can, and they do. And, you know, I've known certainly employees to be successful there and prevail and represent themselves. And my answer sounded like shameless self-promotion, and maybe it was. But here's the reality. And I've had this experience many times and very recent, where I've been called by a new client, and you can always tell when a client calls and you hear their voice when things are a little desperate.
Yes.
And what I'm jumping ahead, but they have received the investigator's report in a case, and it's one that is adverse to them. And that's towards the end of this process before the Maine Human Rights Commission. I said process just to sound like British.
Yeah, well, you've got that right. British twang. Sometimes we know it's fake, but it's fine. It's fine.
I slipped to process.
Process.
Where was I?
Yeah.
All right. You get this letter that says you have discriminated.
Yes.
And by the way, when people read that, it's not like saying it's a workers' comp case and this is work-related. Yeah, that's an adverse finding for the employer, but it says you have discriminated or you harass that person.
It's a powerful statement.
It is. You violated their civil rights. And people then really start almost to panic. And they come and they say, I think we need representation. I never say it, but the bubble above my head is it's almost too late because the die has been cast. The evidence was submitted. The arguments were made. And you know, now you've handed me something where if I could rewind, we might have a much better chance of handling it. And I'm not criticizing them. They've never done it before. And
whereas
lawyers maybe have done it hundreds of times before, and you get to know how the commission works. So what you provide, for example, in response to these requests for information is really important. And I've had, again, these cases where I go through the evidence that has been submitted, and in good faith, the employer decided to turn over every single email that related to this matter. And you read through and you say, that email was never, ever requested. Right. You provided it. And unfortunately, it's causing you a lot of problems. And I'm not for a minute suggesting evidence should be covered up or not provided. But don't give things that you're not required to give.
Rule number one, only give what asked.
So what employers have to realize is that it is a legal proceeding, and it's a legal proceeding that really can have implications, even though the commission cannot require you to do anything. They can't say, I'm awarding damages. You must reinstate this employer. One of the key elements from the commission is that the commission's ultimate product and ruling and decision is public. It's made in a public forum.
That's a big deal.
Sometimes the press attend. Often the press attends. Sometimes the TV attends if it's a case that's worthy of reporting. And then the report itself becomes public. So sometimes you'll read in the Press Herald, teacher discriminated against, fines commission. Bad headline, but you know, and you or I, or a member of the public, reads that and says, okay, discrimination occurred. Nobody says, well, this is a probable cause finding and it's prior to a lawsuit and this is, you know, a screening mechanism. It happened.
Right.
You know, here's a group, there was an investigator, and they said that it happened. No banging on the table.
No banging on the table.
All right, no banging on the table. I was getting pretty carried away by this, wasn't I?
Debbie.
So when I say consult with a lawyer, it's because if it goes south on you, it really can have significant
implications. Yeah, I mean, the reality is, look, we all know that this is not something that employers do every day. This is not something that you should do by yourself. This is one of those things that, hey, you know, you need good representation. And that's not having anything to do with anything other than being smart.
Yeah.
Right? This is just a smart thing to do.
It really isn't. And sometimes the claimant, the employee, will have a lawyer. Sometimes they won't. The fact that the claimant does not have a lawyer, in my mind, doesn't mean that the employer shouldn't have a lawyer. The investigator, the commission, they're not going to bend over backwards, but if somebody doesn't have a lawyer, they'll be supportive of that. They'll gather the evidence for them. So it still has some of those same risks.
All right, so you receive the letter, you get notified that you're going to be, or that you've been accused of this. You are then provided with an investigation letter that tells, this is what we need, right? This is what the investigation, we need to investigate. Talk a little bit about that letter, and we talked a little about the importance of it. Talk about, is there something you need to do with it? Is there something that you should be careful about?
Yeah, well, you have a pretty short period of time now to pull all of the information together. When I say short period of time, the regular real world will say 60 days, that's a short period of time. In the legal world, yes, there is a lot of information to gather. And the commission, appropriately, and I think I completely understand why, have become much more strict about the deadlines. They're trying to expedite the process.
Sure.
They're short-staffed. I'm a management lawyer, and there would be people who have different perspectives about the commission. I think the commission and their staff do a very good job. With the resources they have, are they perfect? No, none of us are. But I think it's a place where a case will get carefully reviewed, and I think more often than not, they get it right, in my opinion. But just to actually answer your question, because I realized I didn't there, the most important thing for those out there who are facing a complaint is don't view it as, geez, the government are asking me questions. I am going to give them absolutely nothing. You know, I'll give them, you know, well, the very, very bare minimum. That's a complete mistake. You want to be cooperative. You want to provide the information that they request. As I said earlier, you don't want to give more than they request. But most of all, you want to advocate and you want to tell your story. And there's a question number two, I believe it is, which is your position statement. And that's where I tell the story. I begin and I describe the company and what they've done and if they've received recognition or awards for land. I want to bring them to life. I don't want them just to be, you know, another company and you know, the big or the big bad corporation. I want to say this is a great place to work. This is what they do. This is what they do in their community because they're being accused of discrimination. And then I want to tell the story about, you know, how the employee was treated. That could be 10, 15, 20 pages of information that I'm sharing because the investigator who's going to ultimately take this file has, I would hazard a guess, but they have 50, 60 cases, maybe more.
Sure.
And they don't have the time to go in and do, you know, a big, complex, thorough investigation. No knock on them. So they're going to rely heavily on what I provide as long as I have credibility.
Right.
So if I have credibility and if I've worked with this commission and these investigators before and they know I'm a straight shooter and that I provide the information that they ask for and I don't, you know, cut corners and I don't present information, in fact, that doesn't even pass the straight face test, they're going to rely on my filing to a degree. They're still going to do their own investigation. They're going to hear from the employee. And what often happens is I get this request. I file my papers. Those are shared with the employee or former employee. And he or she may provide a response to that. And then I may respond to that. So there's a lot of back and forth.
Yeah.
And this file is getting thicker and thicker as that information is shared. And then the investigator has to sift through it and determine what to do next.
You know, there's two questions that come to mind. One, is any of the information at this point public, or is it just the finding at the end that's public?
At this point, the information is confidential.
It's confidential, okay. It would make sense that it would be, but I'm just making sure.
I said you had a good question before. This one's a great question. You know my code on...
Yes. Great means you know the answer.
Exactly. Good means, probably the answer. And tricky means I have no clue.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, the Maine Human Rights Act, there's just been a recent amendment to the law to provide greater protection for some of the confidential information that's provided during the investigative process, particularly medical information and other things, because the files of the investigator are subject to a Freedom of Access request. So I can't sit here today and say everything that's in that file is locked and secure. During the course of the investigation, they have the ability to keep it confidential. But once the investigation is concluded, a great deal of the information can be obtained through a Freedom of Access request, although this very recent amendment to the law provides some exceptions to that.
Sure. Now, you mentioned a little bit about employers that have credibility or attorneys that have credibility in front of the commission. Would it be fair to say that if this is a company that continues to show up in front of the Maine Human Rights Commission multiple times for multiple years, is that looked at or perceived in any way differently than, you know, maybe the first time up there, second time up there, whatever in that particular case?
Anecdotally, yes. I believe if you're a frequent flyer, it's going to color the perception of the employer and a case. Now, we'd like to think, and I believe the good faith of investigators, they're going to look at each case on the merits. But if you are a frequent flyer, I think it's unavoidable that small staff and that commission who you know hear the cases are going to say, oh, here they come again.
Yeah. Well, it's a gut, right? It's a gut reaction to that, of course.
Right. And I've seen as well that some companies and some big ones, in fact, make the mistake of not appearing to take the commission process seriously enough. And a classic example is the day when your case is heard. So there is a day, if the case reaches that point, where we go up to the senator in Augusta and we argue our cases. I love that part of the case. You get 10 minutes, and then Amy Schneerson, who's the executive director, her light goes off and...
You're done.
You're mid-sentence, very fair, But I've been there. I digressed there, didn't I?
You did, but it was well done.
The digression is that I've seen companies go and they either, frankly, don't send a representative or they don't send anybody from the company. So I think when I go and I always bring my client with me. My client at that hearing doesn't testify. They don't say anything, in fact. They sit in the audience and I'll introduce them. But I think it sends a signal that this is an important process.
Sure, they're there.
We're taking it seriously. We're engaged in it. And I've seen some who don't take that view.
Not a good decision on their part. But we're going to learn more about that when we come back. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. Talk to you soon.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobsandme.com has been matching main employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on JobsandME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsandme.com. That's jobsandme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
The best paints for the job site are at the Home Depot, specifically new Glidden Diamond Paint and Primer. It starts at only $23.98 a gallon. It's specially formulated to spray easier and cover walls faster. A lot faster. So you're done and on to the next job faster. Better paint means better jobs. New Glidden Diamond Paint and Primer, starting at just $23.98 a gallon. You'll only find it in one place. The Home Depot. More saving. More doing. U.S. only.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Our guest today is Peter Lowe, employment attorney, partner at the law firm of Brandon Isaacson. We're talking about the Maine Human Rights Commission, and we're really talking about all parts of it. We've talked a little bit already, Peter, about, of course, what it is. We've talked a little bit about what happens when you get the famous letter saying that you've been accused of it. We've talked a little bit about the investigation portion, all the materials that got to be provided to the commission. So let's start there. So the investigation begins. The investigators are doing their thing. What is the outcomes that come from that, and where does it go from here?
Right. So at some point, and this process, by the way, can take up to 2 years. So there's a flurry of activity in the filings and all the things I described, and then it lies dormant. And I get the call from, what's happening? And obviously the client's anxious, and I say, they've got a lot of cases. Then they get to it. It rises to the top of an investigator's pile, and the investigator will indicate whether they have enough information, whether they need more, or whether they want to hold a conference. They could do a fact-finding conference, or what's called an issues and resolution conference. And the latter could involve some settlement negotiations.
Sure.
If necessary. But ultimately, once the investigation has been completed, a report is issued by the investigator. And it's a report that says there are no reasonable grounds to believe unlawful discrimination occurred, or there are reasonable grounds. And it's a fairly detailed report. It will recite the allegations and make findings of fact. The party that, quote, loses on the basis of that report gets an opportunity to file a response. The response and the report gets p- provided to the commissioners. That's in their reading materials.
So to this point, the commissioners have not seen anything.
They've seen
correct? Nothing.
And then the first they see, and they don't get to sift through the file, they see the report, so what the investigator is recommending to them. It's really a recommendation. And then, let's say my client lost, my response saying why I disagree. The commission will review these two documents, as I said, the report from the investigator, the rebuttal filed by one of the parties, and they have a hearing, and each party gets to present their case. No witnesses. It's a presentation of argument, 10 minutes each, and then the commission will deliberate right in front of you, and they will vote, and they'll vote whether or not to accept the report or reject the report. So ultimately, you get a decision from the commission saying, we believe there are reasonable grounds to believe that unlawful discrimination occurred under the Maine Human Rights Act. That decision then can trigger conciliation by the commission. They can try and resolve the case. If there's no reasonable grounds, they'll dismiss the case. In any outcome, the employee claimant can still go ahead, win, lose, or draw. Another little English term thrown in for
you. Sure, draw. Very nice.
And there can be the equivalent of a draw. I've seen the commission tied in their votes before. A tie means, in fact, there's no reasonable grounds. They can still go to court. So some people say, you mean after all that money I've spent and we won, it felt great, you're telling me they could still take me to court? And, you know, the truth
the answer is
yes. Yes, they could. One of the things, though, that's critical to understand is if a lawyer has not been involved in a case and an employee gets a favorable finding, much more likely to be able to find a lawyer than to sure. take the case to court. Unfavorable finding? Maybe harder for a lawyer to back the case, because lawyers do these cases typically on contingent fee basis, which means they have skin in the game. If they win, they get a percentage. If they lose, they get nothing.
When an employer is saying to themselves at this point, okay, I know about this. I know that it can happen. I guess the question, Peter, is that they're asking, how do you avoid this? And I know the answer is pretty basic, an understanding of, you know, be a good employer. But can you be a little more specific maybe about some of the ways that employers can avoid having people feel like they have to go to the Maine Human Rights Commission?
Yeah. There's so many best practices that we don't have time to talk about. So let me sort of pick out what I think is one of the most critical ways that an employer can avoid these claims. And I represent a very large employer here in the state of Maine, and they have had, touching wood, in recent years, very low number of claims filed. It's as a result of many best practices, but one thing that I think it's directly attributable to is an excellent internal complaint mechanism where an employee can be heard. It's in the case of this client, it's called their fair treatment process, which means that an employee or someone who's been terminated, and they would be told at the time of termination that they have this right. If they think the decision's unfair, you have a right to challenge it, question it, raise it, and it's not just going to be reviewed at a low level, it's going to be reviewed at a high level if necessary. And that person feels heard. They're not always going to get the outcome they want, but it does give them an opportunity. And certainly before the termination, if it's a discipline, I think that that's very important, because many people end up going to the commission because they don't know where else to go. And I'm not a cynic and I'm not jaundiced. I believe that the great majority of people who file with the Maine Human Rights Commission are in fact going there because they feel they were treated unfairly. I don't think it's just a simple shakedown and I know I can get some money. There'll be a tiny fraction of those people, I've met them, but the great majority believe that it was not fair, and where else do I go? if you have an internal mechanism that gives them their day and it's done well and they're treated respectfully and they're given an answer, and an answer that's explained. And I've had clients who, through using that mechanism, have actually reinstated employees. They've said, we got it wrong. Let's face it. You work with lots of clients. Good people make mistakes.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, there's that to me, if I had to say what's the most important preventative medicine that an employer can have out there, is think about a fair treatment internal policy. I'm not talking about arbitration and external resolutions. That's in collective bargaining agreements and has many other implications. But a good internal appeal mechanism that gives the employee the opportunity to be heard.
I think that's so critical because, as you know, and I know, most of the time it's because someone has a grievance against someone.
Yep.
And about an individual treatment of someone that they go and they feel they have to lash out and fight back or do something like that, rather than at least having an opportunity to air what they feel and feel that it's out there. So I think that's a very critical piece. You know, one of the other things that I would add to that is they have to feel like they're heard, right?
Right.
And so, it's one thing to feel fairly treated. It's another, sometimes it's just about getting it off the chest.
Yeah, absolutely.
And at the end, they're done getting it off the chest. So, like, I feel much better now, right?
Am I going to get my favorite case off my chest? Because that's really why I came in.
You know, we're going to talk about that in the next segment. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And we'll be right back with Peter's favorite case.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobsinme.com has been matching main employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on JobsNME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit JobsNME.com. That's JobsNME.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis, as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts. StopWrecks.org.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today, our guest has been Peter Lowe. And, of course, you all know him as a frequent guest here at the HR Power Hour, and he's an employment attorney and partner with the law firm of Braun and Isaacson. We're talking about the Maine Human Rights Commission. We've done really, I think, Peter, a great job of explaining it, how it all works, and now how to try to stay away from it. You know, I do want to just clarify for the audience, because you mentioned that the EEOC is the federal commission, and obviously the Maine Human Rights, or any of the human rights commissions in any state. They're all 50 states have them. They're called different things, but they're in all 50 states. I guess the question is, employers would say, well, why would they go to there versus the EEOC? Is there a difference between the two, really?
Yeah, well, there certainly is a difference between the two. I don't want to get too much into the legal weeds. They have this sort of work-sharing agreement. So often, in fact, what will happen is the Maine Human Rights Commission will investigate And then the EEOC will, in essence, rubber stamp. So you will get a document later that says the EEOC is also dismissing the case because there's a certain degree of overlap. So the cases that I have which go straight or are with the EEOC, I think the EEOC, again, very high case volume, they are much more selective. So from time to time, if they feel a case based on the allegations is particularly egregious or it lines up with one of their sort of priorities, and the EEOC, the commission itself issues four or five sort of priority issues that they're focusing on at a particular time. And if the case aligns with that, then they may in fact put resources into it. So you may find as an employer, you're not simply facing, you know, a lawyer representing the employee, but you're facing the EEOC in this particular case. Those can tend to be some of the bigger cases, class action type cases, or as I said, ones where they have placed a priority or emphasis. Your sort of more common everyday case, probably their degree and level of investigation is going to be significantly less than that applied by a state agency like the Maine Human Rights Commission.
No, that makes sense.
You don't end up, which can be a bit, from the legal point of view, you end up with a form that simply says, yes, no, discrimination, no discrimination, and you don't get any report, so you don't get an explanation of their findings.
Right, a much deeper detail.
The commission in Maine provides a written report with an explanation.
Well, the audience was waiting. We teased it last segment. What's your favorite Maine human rights case and why?
Well, there's a good number, but one that just came to mind was, it was a case a number of years ago where I'd call it the kitchen sink complaint. And that was where the employee or former employee in that case, I believe she had been terminated, checked pretty much every box on the list. But to my delight, she checked national origin, and she was a fellow Brit. And in the complaint, if I recall correctly, she had some allegations about people making fun of either her drinking tea or the Queen, or maybe it was both. And I thought, I've been there. I could file this complaint too. There's a times I've been teased about Her Royal Highness, but on a serious note. In any event, her case was not a particularly strong one, but she soldiered through, and we had that day before the commission. And she didn't get to meet me before the commission hearing, and she goes first because, in fact, they had ruled against her. And I knew that the moment I opened my mouth, I was going to put on my very, very best English accent, because she was claiming, you know, discrimination as a Brit.
Sure.
It's, for some reason, saying you've been discriminated as a Brit doesn't get the same sympathy as some other protected classes. So she was a little bit behind already on that one. In any event, I got up, and she was probably surprised to hear how I spoke. But my favorite part of all, and this client who I still work with closely loves to remind me of this, she had a few minutes to rebut, and she got up, and she one of the things she said is, well, I don't have a fancy lawyer like Mr. Lowe, and so I've been called a fancy lawyer by this client ever since.
Fancy?
I was fancy, yeah. Yes. I was a fancy lawyer, and it's such an English term in any event. So she was one of my very favorite cases, and it was I know that commission well enough, and I could see this kind of wry smile on their face when they understood the dynamics of the commission staff of what was going on this particular day.
Well, you just never know, right? I mean, it is serious when the employer is dealing with it, right? It is mind-blowing sometimes to think you've discriminated, especially since you and I know 80% of Maine employers are family businesses. And 99.9 don't discriminate, right? I'm not going to say there isn't such a thing, of course.
Yeah.
But the reality is most want to do the right thing. They want to make widget A or service B. They're not really trying to do the wrong thing. And it's tough sometimes to hear that and to think that they've discriminated against someone.
It really is. I met with a school principal a few months ago who was named in a Maine human rights complaint as allegedly discriminating against a teacher. And, you know, I was sitting down for the meeting, and I do these meetings the whole time. And I paused for a minute, and I could see he was truly, truly scared. And he had done nothing wrong, and I believe we'll be very successful in that case. But, you know, he's reading now how stories can blow up. And he said, you know, what if my name is on the in the paper? You know, I built my career as a principal, and the name in the paper saying, I have violated this individual's human rights. I'm a harasser. That was the allegation. And it was a harassment that is, I didn't like the way my supervisor managed me. He held me accountable. He wrote me up. That's harassment. That term gets used, in my opinion, far too broadly. But I had to sort of pause for a second and reprogram and think, this guy really needs my help in assuring him that I've got control of this case, that I will handle it. I will be respectful of all of these concerns. I'll keep him informed. This isn't just, you know, another case. For me, it's one of many. But for the person who is, you know, accused of these things, right, it really has significant implications. And yes, they're waking up at night and they're anxious, and you know, they need both reassurance and you know, skillful counsel.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, we're human. Yeah, right? At the end of the day, we're all human, and this is a very trying time for people who are accused, whether rightly or wrongly. There's still, it's a trying time in terms of making that happen. Well, Peter, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today, talking about the Maine Human Rights Commission, talking about, you know, how to really handle it, what happens, how to avoid it, and sharing some of your fun stories.
Appreciate you inviting me back. Always fun.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by VeralDana.com.
Hi, this is Tani Alvarez from VeralDana. Does your organization have a practice in place to assist with the review of performance and behavior of its most senior team members? Oftentimes, we see situations in which the employer has set up policies and practices to review the work of subordinate or non-exempt employees, but managers may go years without receiving a performance appraisal or honest feedback about concerns or issues with their performance. The only thing that a practice like this leads to, in the long run, is a headache. Inevitably, at some point in the future, you will have a bad egg in senior management. Someone whose interpersonal behavior does not mesh well with the rest of the team, or who generally isn't sufficiently competent enough to perform the tasks at hand. In these situations, it's imperative that you quickly begin to document these situations and issues. What happened? Who was there? Why is it problematic? Did it violate a policy? Managing senior level managers is always a sensitive topic, but it's necessary to maintain a positive culture. If you have further questions concerning best practices as to this subject, contact a member of VeralDana's Labor and Employment Practice Group.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by VeralDana.com. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.